Feral Audio.
Well, hello. It's time for another episode of Minor Revelations with Drew Droege. Hi. Oh boy, it's great. We have a really fun, action-packed episode ahead. I don't even know what that means on a podcast. What's action-packed? Lots of punching and jumping. But I want to do a little bit of shameless self-promotion because I love to do that on the show. I'm bringing my solo show back to both LA and New York this fall and into the winter. And I wanted to just let people know if you're in LA, I'm doing my show, Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, in LA for just four nights in October, the 22nd to the 25th, four nights in a row at the Celebration Theater. And then I'm doing it in New York at the Soho Playhouse, opening on November 12th. And running for at least 8 weeks through the beginning of January. So I'm going to be in New York for at least 2 months, maybe a little bit longer, doing this show. And I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's so much fun to keep doing. And I can't believe when I started it and that like 4 years ago that it's still banging around. But 4 years ago, I got a wedding invitation to lovely friend's wedding, heterosexuals, and I'll explain why that it matters in a minute, who are fantastic. But the wedding asked us not to wear bright colors or bold patterns to the wedding. And that's because I love my friend dearly, and she wanted a nice palette across the, you know, across the audience, or what do you call the guests? And so it was just one of her, you know, wonderful rules. But to me, there was something about it that came off that was like such a title. I was like, bright colors and bold patterns is such a title. And I was like, that's something. It sort of kind of cooked around in my brain for a bit. And I've also always wanted to write a play where a bunch of gay friends hang out in a house for a weekend, like a Love, Valor, Compassion or a Boys in the Band kind of play that was sort of like how gay friends of mine and I talk to each other, because those plays are wonderful, but there's like a different era. There's a different flavor. There's a different patois, if you will, than how we all talk to each other. And I was like, I want to write. I've always wanted to do something like that. I was driving down to this wedding in Palm Springs, and I just started thinking about like, oh, what is bright colors and bold patterns have to do in context with gay people? And it's everything about it is gay and whatever about the expression. And we all are all about bringing the bright colors and the bold patterns and the whole thing. And then a few months after the wedding, which was lovely and incredible, and the people that did wear bright colors and bold patterns were shamed because they were told not to, as they should be. But gay marriage became legal, and it was a wonderful thing. Obviously, we all cried with joy. It was awesome. Friends that have been, you know, together for years were able to make it legal and official for hospital visits. I mean, for all kinds of reasons, aside from just equality, period. It was great. And I just started to, and I love to be the contrarian and be like, what's on the other side of that? And as I've been noticing in gay culture, I've sort of like, what, God forbid, can we shake the tree on this and sort of look on the other side and say, what might be, what are we losing about this? And what if you were asked to go to a gay wedding and asked not to wear bright colors and bold patterns? And I feel like a lot of gay people are, you know, doing this essentially in the sense of like, I'm not that gay. I'm not going to act that much. I'm not going to be that big. And so I created this character who is everything that gay people are sort of just big, loud, unapologetic, drunk, does drugs, says the wrong things, goes there, talks shit, and, you know, and kind of ruins situations and is kind of going through a crisis himself. And it was sort of like, I was like, I've always wanted to play this role, and it's a dream role to play, and it's not a role that a lot of gay people write because we don't want to see ourselves as that. I mean, I've had other people tell me this. I didn't set out to, like, write the role that no one's ever written before. But it is true. Like, I wanted to kind of play my nightmare in a way and see if I could find a way to play him with love and make people like him, because I do love this character that I get to play. But it just... it's a lot of fun because I normally do so much crazy sketch comedy and wigs and improv and all that stuff that I love doing. But I wanted to do something that would just, like, maybe raise some questions and bring up some painful stuff in my past. Some of it's made up. Some of it's completely true about this. I'm playing a character. I'm screaming at chairs because, yes, there are other characters in the play that you don't see. They're just indicated by chairs. But I also am sharing all this because I just had this idea, and I first put it up in a 30-seat theater in LA, the Versus Theater, which is an incredible theater company. They're one of the few companies in LA. There are several theater companies in LA that are amazing, obviously, but they do theater for theater's sake. They do really quality, challenging work, and it's 30 seats, so it's for the experience of doing it. And there doesn't ever feel a vibe of who's coming to see me here and what will this mean for my career and how will I get ahead. And again, I try not to knock that too much because I realize I am in LA doing all of those things. But it's really refreshing to walk into a space of, like, these are just actors and writers and creators and, you know, designers that really care about this right in front of us and not about anything, what else, you know, beyond it. And I did it for 30 people at a pop, you know, and I was just a bunch of chairs in a room, and Molly Prather directed it brilliantly and just helped me so much with the writing and figuring out what my play was even about. And we would do it once on, like, Sunday nights for, like, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, and it would fill up because it's 30 people and you build from there. And I never had, it was just an idea that I had, and we just sort of put it out there. And it grew and grew, and I did it for 2 nights in New York, and that's when Michael Urie saw it and just had a huge vision for it, and he was like, I want to attach myself to the project. And so, you know, and now we ran at Barrow Street Theater last year for a month, and now we're going for, like, an 8-week, maybe longer run at Soho Playhouse, and that might be it. That might be the end of it, for sure. But I'm just so incredibly grateful that I'm going to get to go to New York and sort of live this idea that I've been playing around with forever. And I love that people are responding to it, and it's starting a lot of really interesting conversations. And I think, like, I'm just meeting people in a different way and really hearing from them. Anyway, it's a lot of fun, and I'd love for you to come see it. If you're, like I said, if you're in LA in October or you're in New York in November, December, come check us out. You can get tickets on brightcolorsandboldpatterns.com if you want to check out and do that. And again, come see it. If you're not interested, don't. I mean, that's fine too. That's all good. I get it. Don't even need a reason. I'll get into that later today. I understand. Later in the podcast, I'll explain why I'm the first one to bail on my own truth. How about that? Let's get into the show. Let's have a show. Well, hello. I'm sitting here with the wonderful Andre Hyland and Adam Slapin. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. Hello.
How are you both?
Good.
Great. Good. Great. It's early in the morning.
Yeah.
At least for us.
Yeah, exactly.
For, like, you know, dirtbag actor people. It's like 9:30.
Right.
We're working at 9:30. How crazy is that?
I'm supposed to catch the muses and write this early.
Oh. Get up and do your morning pages and just, yes. You know. Have you guys ever done that?
What's that?
The artist way? That's what it made me think of.
I have.
People swear by it. I just have never done it. I don't mean to knock it because I know some people are
what
just
is
like,
it? I don't know what that is.
Adam, you want to take
it? Yeah, sure. You first thing in the morning, you set either like a timer or a page limit, and you just write, freehand, no editing, whether it's a story or like a diary entry. And then by the end of it, you just let it be. And then you're able to kind of let the clown brain play and then let the editing stuff go away for a while, which helps us build the creative side.
Gotcha.
And it makes sense because I do have great, you know, by my own standards, great ideas in the morning. No, but it's like sometimes it's like if I wake up like early in the morning, I just am filled with like, you know, all these thoughts. And sometimes for this show,
yeah,
when I think about what I'm going to rant about and I'll have these and I'm also very strongly opinionated early in the morning. And maybe because I wake up just mad. I don't know what it is. But as the day goes on, I mellow.
Yeah.
And I do start to edit. And I have written things down in early in the morning when I think about, and then later in the day when I go to record for the show, and I'll be like, oh, maybe I don't want to get that angry or whatever. And maybe sometimes I'm right because it is maybe a little much, but like there is a method to the madness of like early morning. You wake up very pure, like of whatever that is.
Things are simple.
As the day goes on, I mean, I'm glad the day doesn't make me angrier, but you know, and sometimes it's not anger. It's just like it's a lot of, you know, it's just a lot of emotion, whatever it is.
I'm definitely the opposite. I wake up and I'm just like, ugh. It's like my ideas are like clean out an eye booger, brush your teeth. But I get that rush that you're talking about kind of late at night when I'm going to sleep. That's when I'm hype about ideas.
And it's good to just, it is really good to write it all down in that moment without being able to put the, you know, pen down or without like chopping and, you know, because the hardest thing is, as we know, and all three of us write, it's that like just staring at that blank page and that first word and then you edit it, you cut it out. And you're like, no, that's not the right word. Oh, no, that's not it. That's the hardest thing. You just have to blurt it out there and then, you know, then come back to it later. And, but there's all kinds of things in the artist's way. Isn't there a whole thing about like, don't surround yourself with crazy makers?
Right.
Is that in there too?
What's a crazy maker? You know, just like a crazy person?
A person that essentially drives you crazy, but they're different. They come in different forms. Like somebody who is going to constantly criticize you, or somebody who's got to one up you all the time, or some people are very subtle forms of crazy maker. Right. They're not, you know, they're not screaming in the streets, but
surround yourself with people that bring you up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all that kind of stuff. But I mean, I'm all about whatever gets you through, whatever makes it happen, and whatever, you know. There's got to be a method. You know, Julia Cameron's got to have some idea because everyone swears by her, her book.
Right. And, it's a staple.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I've never read it, never done it, but I highly recommend Julia Cameron's The Artist's Way.
Yeah.
That's how I glean off of other people. There's so many things that I need to do that I'm like, oh, I should do that. Like, I had a friend that went on a silent retreat for 5 days. I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could do it, Andre. I really don't. I have to talk all the time.
Yeah.
But she was talking about, and you're not supposed to look at other people while you're in
that.
It.
That just sounds stupid.
No, but I'm like, part of me just wants to experience so that I can say with authority, that's dumb. You know what I mean? Because like, I completely agree with you. And I think it would make me crazy.
Yeah.
And I think it would, if anything, like create mounds of cancer inside because I couldn't just get it out. Because I have to just get it out all the time.
That's something, I mean, you know, I haven't even said it yet. But yeah, I haven't done that. And I don't know. So I don't really know what I'm talking about. But it seems like you could go somewhere and not talk for free.
I know.
Or
I know.
Not even go somewhere.
But there's there's like this philosophy. And like she was saying what takes over is that you do start to really love humanity. I mean, there's a fun, you know, punchline to this story. It was like, you know, you're sitting and you're eating with people and you're experiencing and you're living with them, but you're not allowed to really communicate with them. And she's like, it really does. There's this weird thing that takes over. You're like, I really love people. And of course you're acknowledging, you're seeing people, but you're just not really like connecting. I don't know.
Then
she said they got in the shuttle on the way back and the people started talking and she was like, these people are fucking idiots. You know, she was like, I hate these people.
Yeah, it's like if your pets could talk, you'd probably be disappointed.
I gotta say, I've done 1 2-day silent retreat.
You did?
It was only 2 days and it was, at first, I just couldn't stop thinking of bits like that would be more fun in the quiet. But by the end of it, coming out of it, it's almost like waking up in the morning, for me at least, where, you know, I feel like there's things to do, but in the morning, first things feel simpler. They feel a little more distilled down.
Yes.
After that 2-day, things felt like, you know, a simple word meant more because it was that word chosen in a way. Like it seemed like it was more specific. But also that ride home, oh my God, I was just, I had to get all the shit out that I was trying to.
Really? Yeah. I would imagine that it would just like, it just clogs you up in a way that like, because, you know, for me, it's like I would want to go, I get that we all talk too much and we all like just babble and just like, it's just sort of like a placeholder for a lot of things that we do, you know. And in improv, you know, they're always like, quit talking so much and feel something or connect or, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I get it. But it's like, I don't know. I don't go to Burning Man. I don't go to therapy. I don't do
Try the short version. Do one of those sensory depth tanks, like a flotation.
I would really want to do.
Also,
like that.
Well, that sounds more bizarre and interesting. Like, right. That sounds more fun.
And that's for an hour. That's not a 5-day thing. You're not
right.
You know.
But also a 5-day thing. I'd rather like. I'm sure they probably. I mean, I don't know again, but I imagine they charge a little something for these silent retreats.
Oh yeah.
Just go to a fucking foreign place where you don't speak the language, and then you get to go on a trip like to a real place, and you're not going to be talking to anybody.
Yeah.
I've done that
before. It's hard to find a place where no one speaks English, though. Unless if you go to, like...
Well, that's you drumming up the conversation if you don't want to do it. You know what I mean?
Right. No, exactly. But I know. I think my takeaway is there are things I hear about them. I'm like, I will be very quick to judge all of that. Because I'm like, I don't need it. But then I'm like... And I do have friends who are more like seekers. And I'm not. And I'm not proud of that. Because I feel like I don't like to be like... confidently ignorant of you know
well, I think it's great
but I'm like I know who I am and I know because I've also been like since I was a kid I've always been this grumpy old man like and I've sort of known what I knew and as a kid I was always told that it was wrong and that I would change and I would eventually come around and I haven't
right
so it's like so I know that like a 2-day retreat you know what I mean but like I just wonder. But I also think, like, I would like to go on a yogurt. There's just also, like...
A yogurt retreat.
Fruit on the bottom.
All you eat is just various creams and probiotics and active cultures. And
you got to go to Dannon. They throw the best one.
Dannon.
Oh, my God. I'm a Stony Field guy myself.
I can't imagine a Dannon retreat. Can you imagine a Dannon corporate retreat? Oh, my God. A lot of phlegm. So much phlegm. So many people like just so mild.
That would be so hard. I hate yogurt to begin with.
You do?
Yeah. Oh, it just ills me out. Dannon retreat would just be the nastiest.
So maybe that's what you need, Andre. Just when you have no other option but yogurt, and you have to turn towards it.
A silent yogurt retreat.
I think of a yoga retreat, and I think about like. How
hot yogurt retreat?
No, a hot yogurt. My God! Oh, it's wonderful. We just turn the room up to 110. The yogurt is just really runny. They're really humescent. Is that a word? It is at that point. Humectant. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know words anymore. I don't know words. It's so early. It's 9:30. I don't know what I'm doing. No, I just think about things that I'm like, maybe it's just because I want a vacation. Because I'm like, I used to do yoga a lot, and I haven't done it in a long time. I actually did a hot yoga and started throwing my back out really badly and not realizing it in class and then being like, I can't walk. And so maybe it was like, maybe don't do that thing where you're maybe not meant to bend in half. And so... I see these things and I'm like a 3-day or like a, you know, like long weekend. And I'm like, oh, that just seems great because it's like total vacation. It's planned for you. But then you have to think about like the people around you.
It's terrifying.
And like who else are doing it. And it's just, it seems like, oh, I have to really like get on board with this. And, you know, and again,
it's like
I don't want to meet
shared
the
Uber Lyft for a weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And who else is taking this hot yogurt retreat that I have to sort of be like, okay, cool, we're going to be...
Right, everybody from that's found God to trying to get drugs out of their body all in the same little...
Yep. So, anyway, I mean, I don't know. Do you go like camping or any like kind of
not really
stuff?
I mean
that's surprising. I would think that you would, Andre, but you don't
on occasion. I don't know, I guess I like camping if there's some sort of level of adventure attached to it. I don't like that camping where it's like, yeah, let's spend $80 on a bunch of groceries just so we could like pay $15 to park next to the woods and then sit there and have a fire and then shit in a fucking wood thing. Like, it's like
don't knock shitting in a wood thing.
That's not fun. Like, yeah, I'd rather, the last time I'd camp, I had a good time camping was, we just sort of accidentally stumbled across a site next to a river and it was down this crazy sort of like, it wasn't a hillside, it was like a legit cliffside. It looked like something out of a cartoon where you're driving this car along the edge, and by the time we got to the bottom, it was dark, and we're like, we can't turn around, we'll just have to stay here. And then all we had was some Pringles and this tall boy of Mountain Dew, and then...
a tall boy of Mountain Dew.
That's how you fall asleep. There you go.
So I put that in a plastic bag and had it cooling off in the river, and then we ate these Pringles, and then...
Why in my mind did I think you poured the Mountain Dew into a plastic bag?
And I think that...
And then put it in the river.
And I think the chips are cooling.
But then I had a portable DVD player, and we watched Fargo.
Oh my God, I love it.
It was really fun.
Like, yeah.
And then we had the river the next day, I was... like stomping around the river, and then I was like, why did it get really loud really quick? That's kind of crazy. And then I made my way across it, and it was the first time I'd ever seen a flash flood. And
wow,
and I got out like, you know, like a with a minute to spare.
Whoa. Whoa.
Scary.
But
that's
that was
crazy.
That was cool. I mean, I don't suggest getting in a river during a flash flood.
Well, no, none
but
of
it was
I mean I'm sure it was really fun. None of it sounds like, you know, like, oh my God, we got to go do that.
Yeah, no, because... it's like, let's go for the weekend, just a Mountain Dew and Pringles for the whole night.
Yes. Right.
But just since it was like something that
but
unfolded.
But there's also the spontaneity has got to make it fun, too, because you're just like, let's do this thing, as opposed to go and plan.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, glamping is like a whole different
thing.
Yeah.
That's
just sort of like irritating, you know.
Yeah. No, I love that.
You do.
I was going to say the $80 bag of groceries sounds great.
With that, I'm just like, let's have a fucking cookout. Like,
yeah, that's
at
the,
my
well,
house.
I love
not,
it.
Not in the woods.
I will go to your house for a cookout. That sounds great. No, I used to camp a lot. I used to live in the Northwest, and I was like members of the Mountaineer Club, and there were some late night camps that were like just straight up scary and cold. And I've learned to really like rolling up somewhere with like some good food for a camp out somewhere in a spot, or glamping. Went glamping in Joshua Tree with like a built beautiful tent in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
I mean, you know, again, for me, like, I go along for, if it's like, I'm like, sure, I'll go along with whatever if I'm with certain people, but I don't think, I mean, I know I could never go out and like really like hike a mountain and like really like rough it with like the grizzly bears and rattlesnakes. That's just not, I mean, I know that's a shocker to everyone. What?
I just go camping with other people.
Right. Right, exactly. Well, and, you know, I don't know. Anyway.
No, but you're right. I mean, in general, I like the idea of, I don't know. I like it if there's some sort of spontaneous adventure to it.
Yes.
But yeah.
And I mean,
yes.
I feel that way about just about parties in general, or just like having a good time in general. When things just feel, when they're easy and they just pop up and you're like, wow, we had this really great night. We just kind of went from one to the, we just kind of listened to our gut and just kind of went to this thing, to that thing.
Yeah.
And those are always the more fun nights than like, okay.
Yeah.
Everyone arrive at 6 p.m., wear a dolphin outfit, you know, we're going to go to the aquarium and, you know, whatever. It's just like always something so planned, and I hate organized fun. It's never fun for me. I don't like guided tours.
Yeah.
I don't like, you know, the person who's like crazy with a clock anywhere when
same.
I'm on vacation.
And
there's the person
that's the meal planner, you know, when you go out for like a huge group trip, someone's got a
breakfast,
you're doing
Yeah, right. I mean, there are certain friends that
stressful.
I'm like, I have like, oh, I think less of you now because I've had a large group meal with you, and you're
right.
Insane when the bill comes. Because it's also at a point where we're all adults.
Yeah.
Just split it. Like,
yes.
Who cares? Like, just like, let's move on. Like, I just don't.
Well, with the,
that's exciting to learn about someone in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know, the bill comes.
Oh, I fucking hate that whole period. Like, yeah. I don't get why people freak out for fucking brunch, because it's just like, I want to wait in line for a birthday dinner in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And then, because it's the bill thing that really sucks, sometimes I'll get there late and I'll just get like a cherry coke and a breadstick. And
right.
Like, that's $23. I'm like, eh.
Yeah, maybe not. We split it. We all had six Bloody Marys. No, it's kind of the same.
I love your
yeah,
food.
Yeah,
I love
like
your
that.
Food groups though, like soda. Like,
yeah, that's
chips.
It. Told us a lot. Told us a lot. Well, I want to.
So you
gotta,
can tell I'm a foodie.
Well, Andre, I have because you said cookout earlier, and I've got to plug your movie because it's so fun. It's so great. Andre has a new movie called The Fourth. Which I got to do a fun, really
You're
small
in
part
you
in.
You have a whole bonus feature dedicated.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
I don't know that. I didn't know that. That's so awesome.
The Blu-ray is out now.
It's out now.
It came out Tuesday.
Okay, so you can get it on, you can get it on Amazon? And
you can get it on Amazon. I know it'll be at some retailers, but I just don't know which ones.
Okay, great.
But Amazon's the best bet. That's, you can get the, VOD is on iTunes and Vudu and Amazon, and then if you want the hard copy, the DVD, you can get that on Amazon, and that comes with all the bonus features.
Oh, great!
Yeah,
I mean, I've got to check out the bonus feature. The movie is so fun. I love the simplicity of just trying to get to a cookout on the 4th of July, and that's what it's about. And Andre's the lead in it, and you just run across these crazy people, including the world's worst, best Uber driver, and. A car with truck nuts and all kinds of fun things. So it's great. It's a blast. So
oh, and it's called The Fourth.
Check it out. It's called The Fourth.
Yeah.
Number 4TH.
Yep.
Check it out, Amazon.
And Drew's super good in it. Yeah, like I said, he got his whole bonus feature.
I am amazing in this movie. I come in there. It was so much fun. It was so much fun to do. It was it was also just, it's gone on a fun ride. It was at Sundance and then, it's been around. So now you can catch it. In person.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
your bonus feature is called Gum Bear.
Oh, Gum Bear.
Yeah.
Yes, it does involve a giant gummy bear that does, bang against some cars. And, Anyway, it'll all make sense when you watch The Fourth.
Yeah.
So how is that going? Are you?
Good. It's nice that it's finally out.
Right. And are you sort of done with it? Like in terms of I know you have to like promote it.
I keep thinking I am, and there seems to always be a little something still going. So, but it went Sundance and then it played festivals for like a year and then it was figuring out where it would get distribution and that kind of thing. And then it finally came out. Like on VOD, it came out July 21st. And then, yes, the Blu-ray just came out September 19th. So, I think that, it's going to start playing on Showtime or Showtime streaming on Showtime. I don't know how shit works anymore.
I know. I don't either. I have no idea on anything.
But it'll on a Showtime service.
Okay.
Starting in late November. So
it'll be really nice when we finally, and I know they're doing it for money reasons because they're getting us in every different way, but it will be really nice when we can watch everything on one thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's like just one service where we can, flip between and see what we want as opposed to like, you have to watch that on Apple TV.
Right.
Or, only network. But that's great. That's awesome.
Thanks, definitely happy it's out and exists.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Point people in a direction of it now.
Right.
Instead of being like, I don't know.
I don't know what's going on.
Sometime soonish.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great. Check it out. I want to talk to you guys. Tell me a story. Tell me a thing. A notion, a belief. I have no idea what you're going to tell me, so.
One time I dropped a mattress on my Nana.
You did? Wait, is that the last thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the end of the story. I'll give you the context.
Cool? Can we just jump to that? Is she okay?
Well, she was afterwards. Yeah, it was my dad's mother from England, and this is when I was like 10.
And how old was she about at the time?
That's a good question. I don't know.
When you're 10, everyone's like ancient, but she may have been
probably
like 60.
In her 70s at believe. So she was visiting from England, and she's nice, but she was definitely more strict than the life I was having. So also some context. So like I was homeschooled for 4 years and this was during that period. And then, which was like,
so why were you, what were your parents' reasons for homeschooling you?
It wasn't religious at all, which is funny. I never even thought that as like a homeschooling reason.
People that I knew growing up homeschool were not, it was not a religious thing either. It was a lot of people were just thought that the education, public education was terrible.
That's pretty much what it was. But it was because of me and my two brothers. I have a sister too, but me and my two brothers all are dyslexic and we had a lot of trouble learning essentially. And then
I never knew that.
We bounced around to a bunch of different schools and then we're just like, let's try homeschooling. Mm. And so the first couple of years were more productive in a traditional schooling way. Then the rest is just like a free-for-all. It's just like me walking around the neighborhood getting Subway and 2 liters. And
you and your sodas.
Sodas and carbs, man. Yes.
The guy at the food. The manager at Subway would call me and my siblings the meatball gang. Because we
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it was like 4th through 7th grade when I was homeschooled. So it was that age period. But But we, you know, at home we just eat whatever we wanted, and we just make videos all the time and just watch TV and do that kind of stuff. So, but anyway, so my Nana came to visit, and then I remember coming down to the kitchen to get some ice cream, which is funny because I'm not even that hot on ice cream. I'm like, ice cream's all right. But anyway,
it's better than yogurt.
For sure. Yeah, like, I 100% agree with that. And then, so I went to get some ice cream, and then she actually ate her ice cream with a knife and fork, which is not to do with this story, but just a side note, that which is like if you're making a joke about British people or something, but she actually would do that. But anyway, I came to get some ice cream, and then she wouldn't let me have ice cream. And I was like, I can have ice cream. It was like, we just go to the fridge and get whatever we want,
right,
whenever.
Right.
And it wasn't like some spoiled jerk. It was just like, that was the norm. And then all of a sudden, I was like, why are you telling me I can't? Just the same way if I wanted like a fucking piece of cheese or something. It wasn't like because it was a dessert. It was just like, I'm hungry and this happens to be what I want right now. Like, why is this a thing? Why is this a thing was kind of like more the...
And so her thing was like, you know, you haven't deserved fruit cup. What's that at British? If you're... Do you guys know what I'm talking
about? Beans on toast?
I don't know. I'm trying to say
bangers and mash?
Oh, yeah. It's like a good little boy deserves fruit cup. It's like some weird little expression. I don't know. You guys, I'm not well.
Deserves fruit cup.
Yeah, there's something about, I don't know. Somebody will comment when this is up and they'll tell me the right thing and I'll be very appreciative. Anyway, so, but maybe it's like she just was, there's like a more of a ritual to like, you can't just eat dessert in the middle of the night.
I think it was just steeped in tradition, like, yeah, you can't just waltz
up
here.
Also, to be totally honest, I mean, if I was taking care of a 10-year-old and he was reaching in the fridge for ice cream in the middle of the day, I would be like, no, maybe not. Just because I would assume your parents are not going to want you to do this. It's going to make you crazy.
Right.
You know, all that.
I mean, she was wrong, but she wasn't in the wrong. Like, you know what I'm saying?
right. Yeah.
She was wrong to our normal stream of healthy eating.
Right.
And then, so I can't remember exactly what happened between her saying no and then it leading to this. Like, basically, I think I went for the ice cream and there was some, I don't know if there's just an altercation, but some sort of like.
God, I would love it.
Some sort of like.
Knives came out.
You know, it became more heated between the no and the I can't have it. Uh-huh. And then, like, I think I went for
fast.
It. Yeah. So I can't remember exactly what happened between then. Like, basically, she got upset and I was upset, which led to me, I think I maybe grabbed the ice cream. I can't remember what I did. I did something to, like, set this off. And I wish I could remember the sort of in-between part. Nothing terrible because the terrible part comes later. Like, so she's saying no, and then... I make a run upstairs. I can't remember if I had the ice cream with me or a spoon or something. But anyway, somehow it goes from the kitchen to her chasing me upstairs because I'm at this point in trouble. And then so she chases me upstairs. And in my room at the time, I had a bunk bed. And it was one of those bunk beds where it's not like a bed. How do I describe this? You know, some bunk beds are a bed, like it's like a rectangle-shaped mattress and then a rectangle-shaped mattress right on top of it.
Right.
The traditional, I guess, bunk bed.
Sure.
It was one of the other ones where the bottom bunk is like bellowed out. So if you were looking at an aerial view of this bunk bed, it would look like an L. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Like the bottom bunk is out a different direction. You guys familiar with that? It's a pretty common
Very nice.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it was one of those bunk beds.
It was like a glump bed. It was instead of glamping.
Which I don't know. I went into that description.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Everybody drunk. That was very
Everyone
clear.
Got it? I'm not good at that kind of comment. Wordplay is not my forte, clearly.
So the top bunk, like the... God, it's... It doesn't even matter. It's a fucking bunk bed. And anyway, like, the top bed is laid flush against the wall. So, like, the long ways against the wall. And at the end of the bunk bed is the door to the room. Oh, I wish I could do a better job describing this.
We get it. You grew up very rich. You're just going to eat ice cream whenever you wanted.
So it's a
you
bunk.
You hate old women.
So and this English crust is chasing you.
Okay. She's very nice. And then there's this bunk bed against the wall. So basically, if you open the door, the top bunk was tall enough where you could angle out the, like, so I got on the top bunk. I knew she was coming up the stairs because, you know, I had a better speed on top of her. You know, I was, like, faster than her. Mm-hmm. And then I run up and I go.
All that Mountain Dew.
sounds like she was old.
Yeah.
So I get on the top
bunk. She's probably, like, running.
You took advantage of an old
She was doing her version of running. running at that point. And then, so I get on the top bunk, and I this is some fucking Kevin McAllister shit. So I push the mattress out. So like, God, I wish this wasn't so visual. So I get on the top bunk. I get on like the top bunk, like metal frame, and I take the mattress and push it out. So the mattress is now hanging over the edge of the bed off the top bunk. Yep. So I'm sitting on the end of the mattress, and the other part of the mattress is hanging over the bed. So it's like a teeter totter, and I'm just as soon as, my plan is like I'll get off the mattress and it'll drop.
And kill her.
Right.
Great.
I don't know what
I've
my
seen
long,
the Wizard of Oz.
I don't know what my long game plan was.
Sure. Right.
But I thought if this it's works out, I can probably get the ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, so C comes up. And she comes in the room, and she doesn't realize this trap I've set. And
well, then why would you?
Right.
It's
exactly.
Not intuitive. There's nothing.
Because I think most people think, oh, other people think the way I think, so I gotta do this quick before
gotta
they
go
catch
in this
on.
Trap again.
And then so she comes in the room, and then I just get off the mattress, and it just drops her, you know?
Oh, my God.
And then she goes on the ground, you know? And then it was an old house, and my room weirdly had two doors into it, and the other door connected to my parents' bedroom. So I'm just like, fuck, what have I done?
And then,
so I flee out the second door.
Did she scream? Did she? Like,
she just kind of was like, huh.
That's a scream for her, yeah.
But in like a British accent,
exactly, and then, very controlled.
And then, I run through my parents' bedroom and then downstairs. And at this point, I'm just like, abort the ice cream. I've gone too far. What have I done? Like, just kind of freaked out. And then I run out the front door and I'm booking it, you know. And I got a lot of momentum and I just run across the street. And it was a year where I guess, are you familiar with cicadas?
Oh, yeah.
Not course. The locusts, but the cicadas.
Oh, the cicadas. Yeah, sure.
They make those really crazy noises. Yeah.
They never made the Bible.
Yeah. And it was the...
Right, it's locusts in the Bible.
And it was like this really
thank
crazy...
Thank you, Adam.
Got you guys.
Yeah.
Shana Tova, Happy New Year, everybody.
And it was this really crazy cicada outbreak. So there was cicada poison on a lot of trees and stuff.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they were poisonous.
Yeah, because people were really fighting cicadas at you. No, they're not... cicadas are not poisonous.
Oh, it's to kill them. See,
humans were poisoning
really
cicadas.
Okay.
Yeah.
So poison. Okay, because I was like, they leave their poison on the trees.
I just had a new fear for cicadas. Fast.
I know. I immediately. I think the world's out to get me at all times. Okay.
So I run across the street.
I am incredibly stupid. I'm so sorry. Of course, it's to kill the cicadas.
So I run across the street as fast as I can, and then like basically across the street, there's a sidewalk, and then it goes into this like hill sort of thing. Anyway, I'm not like I'm going so fast. I'm like, if I don't stop, I'm just gonna like slam into that hill thing. And then, but there's like a house on top. It was like one of those houses with a steep hill that went, it doesn't matter. But anyway, I was like, so I run out and I grab this, it was an old, like a young tree. So it was really skinny. So it was like the size of like a softball bat, you know? So anyway, so I
sapling.
Yeah. Sort of, yeah, in there, yeah. And so I grabbed this young tree. And it stopped me from like running into this little hill or whatever. And then I go, oh my God, what the fuck? And my hand is just shellac. It's just it's just disgusting, thick cicada poison all over my hand, like super thick. And then I'm just like, oh, great. And then I'm thinking, I can't go back in the house to clean the cicada poison off of my hand.
There's a dead body.
Because I'm in trouble. Yeah. Because I'm in trouble. And then,
so what did your grandmother or parents do?
Yeah, did she get up? You left off with her going,
oh, yeah.
She survived.
She was there for a week, but she
survived.
Fine.
I ended up going around the side of the house and using the garden hose to clean my hand, and it didn't really work. I really needed to get in there with like a towel and
probably
I was just like
some sort of oil based soap, not like just, you know, because it's got to cut through that.
And then I just waited for my parents to get home before I went back inside.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then it kind of all went out. It kind of went okay. Like,
oh my God. If I did that to my grandmother, my family would lose their mind. I mean, I can't imagine what, I think I would be punished beyond belief.
Yeah.
I mean
I probably should have, man. I don't know. We all worked out okay.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you feel bad, right? I mean, yeah. Like you felt horrible.
I wouldn't do it again.
That's like pretty much the punishment is you have to live with the fact that you did that to your grandmother, you know? And I think, like, it's like, I don't know. I hear those stories and I'm like, why does anyone want children? Because if I if I gave birth to something, raised it, it went on to have children, I'm a grandfather at this point, and I'm just trying to keep my children safe and well and give them love and whatever.
Yeah.
And this brat threw a mattress on me and my seven after I chased them up the stairs. I would just be like, there's just no point. Like, I just, why do I try? You know, and yeah. I just don't know why you would want to create
a
creature.
Like a brat, that would do but that. I swear I wasn't. It was
no,
just
but,
like...
but in that moment, yeah. You know, you're just like, I have this thing that I want, you know, and it's, you know, I mean, I love it. I you know, and, of you know, I also, I love that you were just encouraged and you and your brothers have made videos early on in your life. Like, you've always done that. Like, that's always been the thing I've known about you is you're always making your own stuff and just you're just such a like just a one-man show about just like constantly creating and generating. So you would do that early when you were a kid.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
So I definitely think the homeschooling works.
Yeah, well, I mean, in that way for sure, because like I had to learn so much stuff later because I drank the Kool-Aid about like school and I was like, you know, really
you're
like
kind of force fed that drink, you know.
Yeah, but like, yeah, I was good at it and I could make really good grades and it was like, this is a way that I can you know, achieve and show people that I am, you know, that I here's how I can win and I'm not good at sports and, you know, and so this is how, and so I was like straight A's and I was like in every club and I was going to do everything right. And none of it really mattered, really, ultimately. And my brother would come, you know, and I've said this a lot on here, but I'm not too much into it. But he was sort of like, he got the memo earlier, like, this doesn't mean a whole bunch of shit at all. Like, I'm just going to be, you know. And I think, like, creatively,
yeah.
You're not encouraged in school. I remember in high school.
Most places, no. Yeah.
No, like, there was something that we read, and I don't even remember what the assignment was, but I just decided to, like, do something really, like, creative with, like, we were supposed to write a book report about something, and I think I wrote it in, like, first person, like, yeah. A diary entry or something.
Yeah.
And I remember my teacher in 11th grade, just all she wrote on it was just C. And there was no comment on her or anything. And I went up to her and I was like, why did I get a C?
Yeah.
And she was like, you get a C for creative.
What?
And it was like,
is that like a,
first of all, bitch,
Jesus.
A C is anything but creative. Either give me an A or an F.
Right.
Like, fuck, fail me before you give me a C. C means average. And how, what is that fucking message that being creative is,
right.
Meh. Like, And you know, to me, like, medium is death. Like, I'm just like, love me or hate me, but don't, like, go, meh, you're average. Like, I fought all my life not to be average. You know what I mean? I'm like,
right.
You know, and I just, it flew all over me. And I was like, you teach, you know, English?
Yeah.
Like, how dare you? You know,
right.
But that's what school is. It's like, follow the rules, you know, do the right thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I think,
follow a safe program.
Yes.
Right.
And I think if you, you know, you're sort of brought up as a kid, now, you will, you know, answer your id a lot more. And I know, like, you were a great kid, but, like, I'm just using this as an example.
Sure, yeah.
You will be like, you know what? I'm in touch with how I feel and who I am. You're going to get a mattress on you today because I didn't get ice cream, you know? Whereas I know that the way I was brought up, it would have been very much like, you know, the more you ask for ice cream, the less things you're going to get.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, adults are always right. This is the authority.
Yeah.
We're just going to get harder and harder on you until you back down.
Yeah.
You will lose this fight.
I will say,
which was not great training for me creatively. Because
right.
Or in this business. Like, I'm the worst one. When people are like, you got to bang down every door. You got to tell people who you are. I'm like, I'm the first one out. If somebody goes, I'm not really sure about you. I'm like, I'm good. I'm out. I get it.
Right.
It. You know, because I'm so like, I will not push myself on anyone. And it's something that I've had to fight forever about, like, go in there and own who you are and get in that room and do it. Because the second I have anybody going, I'm like, I know. I'm terrible and you're right. You hold the keys.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And that's, I'm not proud of that at all.
Yeah. I don't, it's you funny know? Too with that. Like, I don't know. It depends on what I'm out like trying to sell, I guess. Like, if I'm like, I don't know. It's funny. Like, if I'm trying to pitch something, I'm normally pretty confident and happy with it because I'm like, yeah, I think this thing's cool. I'm good with it. Like,
right.
I'm not embarrassed by whatever. Like, I think it's good. It's in my mind, I'm like, well, it's their loss if they don't take it. They sit here all day and fucking take ideas. I got a channel. If I had a channel, I'd just make my own shows all the
right,
time.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
But then...
And people know that about you. I mean, when people talk about you, it's like always like you're always just making what you like and what you know to be good, and it's what makes your stuff so specific and so great. And that's an awesome quality to have. And you're right. I mean, these people, I mean, it's something that, like, I also know and I've gotten better at, but these people that are making these decisions, they're not creative people most of the time, some of them, that's why I catch myself, because I'm like, oh my God, I think about so many great people that we've gone in for that are in those positions, of course. But, like, you sometimes you're just like, the minute they start talking to you about your thing, you're like, oh, you don't really get this, and I'll just kind of do my own thing, because you don't really, you know.
Worst is getting notes from, I mean, again, it's like, most of the time that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
but, you know, a lot of, you know, anything cool you've ever seen on or get made got okayed by somebody on some
Absolutely.
Level.
Absolutely.
Good ones are out there.
And it comes from somebody who just kind of lets you do your own thing, and I think it's the greatest thing about, with 8 million networks and things taking over and everybody, you know, kind of working, doing their own thing, there's a lot more creative freedom that's happening. Because
for
people are just going, you know what? There's no more universal audience. There's no more thing that, like, we have to sell this to everybody in America. There's nothing that even equals that anymore.
Yeah.
And so now they're like, oh, we have this super specific niche that wants you, and or they trust you and they just let you go. They're like, here's a check, do your thing.
Yeah.
And it is, that's so much better, because you know, you don't have people getting in the way.
Comedy, too, for sure.
Oh,
and anything,
God.
Really, but comedy, like, if the voice isn't allowed to be specifically itself, it just is, like, becomes just a shitty version of
it. Well, that's why studio comedies are so hard to make now,
right.
Or to be good, because you have 8 million cooks in the kitchen, and all, like, they pour over every joke. You can feel it in some bigger movies when you're just like, oh my God, they thought about every single, they did 12 alts for every line.
Right.
And they were just like, okay, try this, now try this, now try it this way, now try it this, and let's have a meeting about this line and do.
Yeah.
And it feels so manufactured and formulaic and labored is the biggest thing. And sometimes in comedy, you're like, why does this feel like everyone's working so hard to make every single line land and every line be a laugh? And, you know,
I don't mind there,
like,
being a bazillion,
you
know, alts just for fun, but, like,
sure,
but
they're fun to do, but.
But what I can't stand is just jokes for joke's sake.
I can't stand it either.
Yeah, it's like, if you isolated that one joke, sure, that's funny, but it doesn't make sense in the rest of this tone or this world or the.
Right.
Whatever the truth of the situation
was. You know, I just watched. Have you seen. You may have seen this movie because it feels very in line with a lot of. I mean, I don't know. Hal Ashby's movie, The Landlord. Have you ever seen that movie?
I just saw that.
Oh my God. I just saw it too.
Yeah.
Have you seen it, Adam?
No, I haven't.
With Beau Bridges, right?
Yes, yeah. Beau Bridges.
That's a weird
it's
movie.
It's so weird. And Lee Grant.
I don't know what the goal is with that.
But I loved it because it was just, and like Pearl Bailey and, oh my God, Susan Anspach. Is that how you say her name? Who's the sister who's all high all the time and throws herself downstairs.
Oh, yeah.
It's
sounds good.
It's great, but yes, it's super weird, and it came out at a time. It was like Hal Ashby's first movie.
Yeah.
And
I saw it at the theater recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was in New York this summer. They played it. Was it the Film Forum?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were playing like all 70s New York movies.
Oh, my God. I love it. Yeah, it's very 70s and very New York. And all about gentrification, which is which really interesting. What's all happening now. Beau Bridges is this very wealthy, white, you know, Lee Grant is brilliant in the movie as his mom. And he basically takes over this predominantly or all black apartment complex.
Yeah. Where was it?
Park Slope. No.
It was Park Slope.
Yeah. Which is so funny now because it's like, it was like they present it like it's the slums and he becomes the landlord.
Yeah.
And
but I mean, it was 1970 or something.
Yes.
They shot it. Yeah.
And it's all about, you know, just like, the white guy with good intentions trying to come into this black neighborhood and trying, you know, to, and he's like, he's great in it, in the movie. He's really good. And Pearl Bailey is hilarious. The scene with Lee Grant, Pearl Grant, it's wonderful, but it feels very much like one person's voice. And it doesn't feel like there's like anybody going in there going, where are the jokes? Because there's so many moments you're like, was that, it's so funny, but you're like, it's so like, if I told you everything that happens, there's a real like,
it's a bizarre
social
movie.
Message. It's really bizarre. It just begins. It just is, and we, because as it started, we were like, where's the beginning, middle, end of this movie? It doesn't really have...
Well, it's also, like, take even the content or whatever, like, the story. I don't even know how to describe it. Like, take that. Just, like, take... It's like a, about the, like, young yuppie moving into, like, a predominantly black neighborhood and, like, gentrifying it. Yeah. Just take that out of the equation. It's like, it's just a weird movie anyway. Just like, the way it's, like, the stylized and everything. Yeah.
It just presents things and it's just sort of like, you can decide if it's whatever it is, if it's comedy, drama, whatever. But I have to thank the wonderful Frankie Frascatore for my friend, who I have to give him a shout out for showing it to me, because he was like, "You'll love this movie. We have to watch this." And we sat down and we were like, and he, you know, he's seen it a million times, but I was like, "This is, I just love, you know, when you find like a classic like that that's just so singular."
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't, you know, it's,
it wasn't my favorite movie, but there was definitely, I liked that. I was just like, I don't know where this is going.
No, you don't. And it's like,
kind of an, even if a movie's frustrating, it's kind of nice to have that feeling of like, I don't know where this is going or what this dude wants or what the hell. I mean, there's some things that are clear that he wanted, but like, but in just like, it wasn't,
Well, it also, it's like, it was very much, I think, influenced by The Graduate and that time.
Oh, for
You know, it's just sort of like, that sort of malaise, the ennui of being like a sort of pampered white kid, and you are kind of wandering.
I've got all the
through.
Options in the world, so I don't know what to do.
Exactly, you know, and it was sort of like, you know, we've, you know, but anyway.
Did you see Mother? Have you seen that?
Oh my God!
People have been talking
about
that.
We only have so much time. I have to say, I, as someone who loved Requiem for a Dream and The Wrestler, I think Mother might be one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. I find it irredeemable. I think it's disgusting. I thought amazing performances.
Yeah.
I thought people were great, you know, in it. But I'm just so fucking tired of seeing. I don't want to see fucking women get the shit beat out of them. I don't want to see a man call his wife cunt four times just to prove a point, because that's how the world is, and the house is falling apart. None of it made any sense. I just was praying for it to be over. I kept falling asleep.
Oh, you fell asleep?
And my friend, I was with Frankie again.
Why doesn't he have a driveway?
Why is there no driveway?
I mean, which is almost a silly question to ask by the end.
The thing is, too, the pretension of not giving them names and being like, it's a mother and him.
Oh, right.
And it's, you know, and it was just, there. It felt so film school to me. It felt so, like, contrived. You can't tell me that there's something behind it. I don't believe it. I felt like
it was super heavy-handed and silly at times. But I will also say I really enjoyed watching all that madness unfold.
It's madness.
It was just like insane. I thought that was super fun to watch.
Well, for a while, and then but my problem was like it wasn't earned. Like at the beginning, you don't know anything about these people, and it's kind of the point that they're supposed to represent men and women. Well, then
no, there was definitely a lot of corny shit in there.
Problematic. But the calling your movie an allegory, jump off a plate of dicks. Like, that just means you don't really know. And that's a film school move. Like, I'm making an allegory about people. It's like, you know, and I hate that. I hated that in that Lars von Trier Antichrist movie where there was he and she, and it's like Garden of Eden. And I'm like, stop. Like, tell me a story about these people, and as opposed to, like, telling me what humanity is like, you know? And I know that, like, misogyny exists, and, you know, and we're all pigs, and we're consumers, and I got that we were all, like, and we're just tearing apart our own homes and all that, but, like, at the end of the day, like, I don't care about these people because they don't have names, they don't have backs, they don't have anything for me to hook into other than, you know, they're just representing, you know, humans.
Yeah.
Oh.
If you think about it, like, if, I don't know, like, think if it's like a deranged lotion commercial, then it's like pretty.
Oh, that would be amazing. Oh.
So I was thinking that when that movie started, like,
oh my God,
minutes.
I would love it.
It feels like some fucking lotion
commercial. If it was 15 minute long lotion commercial, I would be like, and it just said lotion.
But still has the same
end.
Trajectory and everything.
Yeah, same thing. But
in the end, she ends with very bad skin.
Yes, please. Then I would completely sign off on it. All right, Adam, I want to hear. I want to hear a story or a thought or a feeling.
I came with a thought, and then your story, Andre, made me think of this old story when I was a kid, and I saved up to buy this this G.I. Joe plane, and like,
oh, which one?
You know, okay, it was
the one with the drop down cockpit.
No, no. But your family sounds really cool.
We get it, Andre. Wow.
So did
I got it at Mayfair. It was a whatever yard sale thing.
So I saved up for this miniature G.I. Joe dream of this little like, it was like a triangular kind of delta shaped like miniature stealth thing. Mm-hmm. So I put it together, maybe seven, and I put the pieces together in a wrong order.
Yeah.
Like they locked in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh no. And I was really frustrated. And I got my mom to help me and she couldn't do it. She was trying and she was being really sweet. And I was just so frustrated. I had a good idea. I was like, well, why don't you think you're using your fucking hand?
Yeah. Oh my God, you said fucking hand.
I sure did. I sure did. Whoa. Yeah, and you could feel the air leave the world. Right, right. And that's how that felt. But in pitch silence, you know? And
also, like, I love the logic of why don't you use your fucking hand?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
Our rule in the house about swearing was I could swear in the house. Always.
Oh, okay.
And so I learned from a young age, like, kind of, you know, it happens, adults do it, you got to find a place and a time.
Right.
So there was, I felt a little bit of, you know, what might be fairness, but it was at my mom, so I know that wasn't cool.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So she, like, was one of the most scary, quiet furies I've seen. She goes to the kitchen and gets a wooden spoon. And so our house was a one-story house where you walk in the living room, the room to the right was a kitchen, my room, then a connecting bathroom, connecting mom's room, back to living room. So it was a circle. So she chased me around for like 5 minutes. We kept dodging each other. And I was like, I'll hide in the bathtub. So I got in the bathtub and I lied back. And then she saw me and she reached over the spoon and like, as light as you would like wipe salt off the top of a salt shaker, she takes the spoon and is like,
oh,
tap.
Wow.
And just by the point, I was like screaming. I was like, you don't know your strength. So I learned. That was my little story.
Wow. Well, I love that. I love the salt off a salt shaker. That's so evocative.
Yeah. Thank you. Well,
I mean, I love it. I also just love that, like, you were allowed to cuss in the house.
Yeah.
Because that's such an interesting rule. Again, I don't know how I would do with kids. It's very hard for me to hold my tongue. And, you know, I didn't hear my parents cuss, you know, except it. I remember when I was maybe 10 and my dad dropped an ice cube on the floor and I heard him say shit for the first time. And I was like, oh, he just said, you know, so I remember that. So that was like that was a moment. Mm-hmm. And now, like, you know, my mom and stepdad, when I get together with my family, we cuss all the time. But I'm still like have a formality. Like, I'm very aware of what's coming out of my mouth.
Right.
And I think it's like, it is, you know, and I would never like, you know, cuss in front of my grandparents or, you know, I think that there's just, I mean, there would just be no way I would do that. I mean, that was just like, it was such a thing, was like, just there's certain words you just don't use and things we don't talk about. And, you know, I love that, like, you know, and I'm trying to think now, like, what I did, you know, I do remember when I was with my grandmother, my mom's mom, who is still alive and just the sweetest woman. She's just the greatest. And she, and also I was just like, you know, the first grandson. And so I could just do no wrong. And it was just like, always like the sweetest grandbaby, you know? And, there was a time where I had took a stick from outside and I came in and I kept, running it across her wall, like just a stick, just like dragging it across the wall.
Yeah.
And that was what I was going to do today. That was my game. That was it. That was what we had planned. And my grandmother asked several times for me to stop dragging a stick across her painted wall. And I just kept doing it. And she reached out and she popped me just on the leg. Like, it was nothing. But that for her to do that had to take so much out of her. But I also was like devastated, like sobbing,
right. Oh,
like it was
God,
the saddest. And we got spanked a lot. Like, my dad would take us out to the car. My dad would also say,
the car?
Yeah, we would get spanked. Like, if we were out somewhere, like he would take us out to the car and spank us in the car. And he would say, yeah, I don't know. That was our thing. Cause it was like, I'm not going to like hit you in front of people. It's in the car. And also, here's the other crazy thing. And it's also like from growing up in North Carolina, it's going to sound so horrifying. And I maybe there's something I'm repressing, But they would also say, too, like, do you want to go out to the car for a moment of prayer? No, for a word of prayer. That was it.
No.
Go out to the car for a word of prayer. Like, you want to go out to the car for a word of prayer? And a word of prayer meant you're going to get spanked. So that was all connected.
Thanks, Jesus.
To, yeah. Everything's connected to that. So it doesn't feel weird when you grow up in that world and everything is God help her, she tries, or just like Jesus knows her and look up, look at God. You know, that's just part of the vernacular. So like when you say God, you know, it sounds so like, oh my God, you connected abuse with the church, you know, but anyway, we got spanked a lot and, you know, we were always in trouble for things. My brother was always in way more trouble than I was. Like, because I just learned how to not get spanked. When my brother didn't care. He was just like, this is all dumb. And now he's a dad and he's incredibly patient with his children and just like takes a lot of time explaining, you know, because he's just like, I don't believe in that sort of thing. And I don't think that they spank, but I don't know. I don't feel like spanking really like ruined me. I mean, in a way, like I'm like glad / irritated at the world because they weren't raised the same way about like manners and
it doesn't work. I used to work in a preschool and I used to be nanny and any kids that were used to more pressure, and I also used to train dogs too, mm-hmm. and dogs that were built under mm-hmm. more pressure, they can't focus because they're worried something's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean,
I had a super embarrassing spanking experience for a
while. What?
You had a convertible?
There was like a pool I used to go to, and then like the kids who were like on the swim team. Anyway, they were like the popular kids, and they would like sort of. Me and my siblings would always kind of do battle with them. They would call us curly cues, and they like hated on us.
The meatball gang and the curly cues.
They would add ruder things to the end of it, but like that was the thing. Anyway, one day, like some, like you know, I'd have a friend, you know, like a sleepover or something like that. So I'd have like a buddy to mm-hmm. sort of like as backup, and then mm-hmm. we had like a good day of like comebacks and like a fight or whatever it was. It went down like we kind of won that day against these asshole kids that are on the swim team kids or whatever. And then anyway, we're leaving at the end of the day and I'm feeling really victorious and really good about it. And we get in my mom's car and we're driving away and I see two of the kids who are kind of like the leaders of the assholes, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then so I'm thinking, oh, this is awesome. I'm in like a getaway car. This is perfect. And so I see them at the end of like this, I don't know, this path that goes to the parking lot as we're pulling away. And I just yell out the window, see you later, assholes. And then I'm like, that's so good. And then all of a sudden my car just stops. And my mom was like, what did you say? When we get home, I'm spanking. You were getting spanked, and I was like, oh, and it was like right in front of my fucking like nemesis.
In front of your, oh God, oh, that's the worst.
I didn't even get spanked either.
There's like nothing. Well, you don't need to.
I know exactly. Yeah,
you're like, I've already been so humiliated. Yeah, there's nothing you could do.
Oh God. And I was past the age of getting spanked. Really, I think my mom just panicked because I was yelling asshole out the car window at this pool we go to.
Oh my God, there's nothing worse than getting like scolded by your parent in front of like, in front of the cool kids that you're trying to, I mean, oh my God, the absolute worst.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Those two kids
go from badass to ass beating.
That's just,
you know, oh, that's pretty, pretty awful. But yeah, I just think like, my brother was a biter, and I may have told this story before too, but forever, like they had told my family, like, I mean, you know, they were like trying everything to just get him to stop biting people. And they, you know, they were just like, you know, whatever you do, don't bite him back. Cause that's showing him that it's good. And
bite him back.
Like, yeah. Because they're like, what else do you do?
I bit my mom, got bit back, never did it again.
Well, that's the thing. My brother bit me because I, like, took his He-Man figure or whatever. And as my father would describe it, I think I have told this before, so sorry if you heard this before. Because my father, we tend to exaggerate. My father was like, two full jaw impression, like my brother was a snake and was able to lay both of his like jaws on my chest and like get a full indention of all of his teeth on my chest. That's how my dad would describe it.
Crazy.
He had a flair for the dramatic. And so my dad was so mad that my brother bit me that my dad chased my brother down and bit him on the arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my brother never bit again.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a moment that Dad said he felt like horrible.
You got to teach empathy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sure in his mind, but
in his mind, he was like, I can't believe I bit my child. Because, like, the spanking, we were never like whipped. It was never like horrifying. You know, it was never that.
Well, that's a good sign that he was shocked and not like, I've been fucking waiting to bite this kid.
Oh, God, no. No. My dad, no.
He's like, finally.
My dad was very dramatic and then like hated any sort of physical confrontation. He hated doing anything like that. And so in that moment, he lost his mind and felt horrible. Yet my brother will never bite again. So there are times that I do think you have to, I don't know. We've talked about kids a lot on here. I guess we'll tell
kids
stories.
I bit a teacher once.
You were?
I bit a teacher.
Oh, you bit a teacher?
Yeah. She was twisting my arm. She was leading me to an office, and I bit her. This is a whole long story.
Was this before you were homeschooled?
This is before, yeah. It's a lot of stories that I'll just skip. But, you know, I wasn't like a brat. A lot of it had to do with having just, I was I guess it could be described as like a hellraiser in school. But it was never like malicious or for bratty. It was just because everybody.
There were reasons.
Yeah. People would treat you like you're stupid. I knew I wasn't stupid, but I felt stupid, blah, blah, blah. Because it was hard to read and all this stuff. And this teacher sucked. And she was twisting my arm and I bit her. And I lived close enough to this school, so I just ran home.
Oh, my God.
I bit her and went out the door. And we, and we found...
I mean, literally, mic drop, just like walking home, bitch. Get some Bactine.
There was a teacher in high school that I was sat in the back of class. My friend and I were like making fireballs in our hand with a lighter.
Yeah.
And he was trying to get us to leave the class and give the homework assignment, but we kept talking and doing shit in the back. And so through everybody talking, he's like, hey, Adam, this is the kind of shit I'm talking about. And like it went dead quiet, and I looked at him and I was like, oh, this is the kind of shit you're talking about? And he's like, yeah, stay after class. I just need to talk to you. I was like, okay, cool. And then everybody left. He's like, I just need to talk to people, but we're cool, right? I was like, yeah, we're cool.
Oh, God. Ew. Yeah, ew. I'm like, I cussed in front of you and I'm going to be in trouble otherwise.
It's gross.
I thought he was trying to scare straight you and you just like responded to it. Then he's like, oh, God, what have I done?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, he also just told you, he gave up his power in that moment because like he just told you like, I'm going to be in trouble if you tell people I said shit.
Pretty much.
But, and I think in that case, the teacher should have every right to say shit. Mm-hmm. It's like, come on, the teacher's in charge of disciplining all these people. And it's like, yeah, you need to hear, like, there's, who cares that, you know, like, yeah. It makes me upset that a teacher would get in trouble for that. And then, you know, and for, you know, as opposed to some emotional shit that they can actually pull on you. Right. That's really
rough.
I got
off easy. I did.
Well, I had so many teachers. I had so many teachers that were just emotionally abusive that it's like, yeah, just saying a word, who cares, you know, like, ugh.
And teachers are constrained in weird ways, too. I mean, there's plenty that suck, but there's plenty that just suck due to constraint. Like, they're worried, like, oh, my God, like, they're worried, like, you'd go home, tell your parents, and then they'd tell their administrator, then they'd get fired, or whatever. Right. Everybody's worried about getting sued or this
or
that.
Well, I know. And as it continues to happen, it's like, you know, as improv teachers that teach adults, there's all kinds of stuff about, like, sensitivity that you have to be, you know, now aware of because it's just, you know, you're in charge of people's comedy fate and then, you know, they will pull anything they can, but, you know, and it's always, you know, the students who can't do it, who are going to pull out like you were, you know, disrespectful to me and my journey and whatever. And you have to constantly
deal with. Are they fake injuries or something?
Oh, right.
What? Are they fake injuries?
There are people who will say, I have a condition where I can't do blah, 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 blah. And you go, good luck in life, but there's the door. I mean, essentially, you know, if you have an ability, you know, an inability to get emotional or an inability to... you know, see that's just part of it. And it's like, I want you to be okay and do something else, but you're not going to be able to do this. And it holds back the rest of the class.
Yeah.
You also, you know, just have a lot of people that are just, you know, we have a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately about like, there've been a lot of heterosexual, cisgendered male teachers that are just like nervous about every woman they teach, every person of color, every trans or non-binary person because they are like, I don't want to, it's like the pendulum swinging back to where they're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know
like
what to say.
Into a corner. Right.
And I'm going to, if I'm really hard on you, are you going to think it's because, and it's like, oh my God, you have to just, you treat everybody the same. And if someone's, you know, problems come up, you deal with them one at a time, but you can't worry about somebody's you know, personal journey.
Well, it's funny too, because most of the people that are like insensitive or jerk, or like, say, I mean, you could apply this to any issue just in general, like the person that's part of the problem, it's going to continue to be because they're kind of a dick.
Oh,
then,
yeah,
then
exactly.
A lot of times the person that's ultra sensitive to it just becomes this like crippled weirdo painted into a corner,
exactly.
Doesn't know what to say anymore.
And right.
There's got to be like a medium.
And when you're
that
the and
you
when
can,
you're the authority,
you
have
in.
To realize like, oh no, wait, this person's pulling my leg, and I need to be in charge and say, you know, here's what's going on.
Right.
You know? And it's like. You know, anybody who is worth their salt wants to be treated the same as anybody else,
right.
You know, and especially if you're there, like in the context of like you're an adult taking a comedy class, you just want to be treated fairly.
Right.
And it's very easy. I mean, it's like for me as a gay person to be like immediately go, oh, you just said that to me because I'm gay. It's like so easy to do. And it's usually you have to believe it's usually not the case.
Yeah.
You know, and when it is. It's, you know, you have to be able to feel out, and you know, we're often wrong about that, but a lot of times it's like, you just have to do better. You just have to get better. It's not that because that, you know, someone's just, they're not thinking of you that deeply. They're not trying to exclude you. And, you know, and I'm not really teaching that much anymore, but when I was, you know, when students would sort of draw these lines that it's like, I had certain prejudices or I had certain sort of, you know, issues with whatever. I'm like, it is so not about that. I wish you knew how little I cared once I walk out of the room. I'm only here in this moment to help you and get the best you can and give you notes that are going to help you.
Right.
I'm not here to tear you down as a human being or to discredit you, you know, in life, you know, and it's hard when you're a teacher because you have, you know, X number of like personalities to sort of deal with.
Well, and you can't be responsible for what other people are willing to do for themselves, their own work.
Absolutely.
They step in the room and then they have to do the rest
exactly.
Of the
work on their They're own. People that, you know, you get, I mean, with adults, we would give homework assignments like bring in a character from your life or bring in somebody you've observed.
Yeah.
And that's fun for people who love doing this. And it's a fun thing to be like, oh, I get to find a character and come in with.
Yeah.
And then somebody shows up and they're like, I didn't do the assignment. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't care. Moving on. And then it was like, afterwards, like, can I do it next week? No, you can't do it next week. What do you mean? You know, and then it's like, well, you're really insensitive to me. And then you don't understand. Like, my aunt died and I didn't have time. And I'm like, I don't care. Like, it's not even like I hate you and I want you to, you know. It's just like, no, that's what we're doing today. And you have to take care of yourself. Or if we say, like, you need to go and take an acting class before your next class here because you need to learn how to act. And if they don't do that, then, you know, or like figure out your issues with your mom because every scene you come in with, it's fuck you, mom. Maybe deal with that before you start every scene that way. There's so many things that people do have to take responsibility for in life. And I'm like, we're here for 3 hours and we're trying to just make up shit.
Right.
You know? That's it.
That's got to be a funny thing to teach anyway. Just, I've never taught like an improv class, but I just remember like a 101 class or whatever the first, because I just remember that's all I ever took was like a 101 class. And then like, but it was such a variety of people. Some people were pursuing comedy. Some people were like acting like, I think this would be good for me. Someone was like, I just want to get better at public speaking. And then there was this one guy who was just like a total Austin Powers, but like not an endearing one, just like a creepy one that just wanted to sleep with girls in the class. But he was such a cartoon. No one fell for him.
Yes.
But it was such a weird mix. But.
It is a very, especially the level one class. It's a very weird, you know, Island of Misfit Toys, just everything.
Yeah.
And you do start to, you know, you start to see types. So you start to see like, oh, I know how to get to you or whatever. But, you know, there's just this belief as a teacher that you hold the keys to this kingdom that doesn't exist. And you're just there to try to, you know, help people and get better. And like, you know, and I loved it. I loved because it was like 3 hours that I wasn't thinking about myself that I could like get in there and do that. But you know, you get that one person and then they want to like label, they want to put all this stuff on you as a teacher, like against them because they can't deal with the fact that they're, you know, struggling. And it's also, that's part of the, like, embrace the struggle. Like, that's why you're there to learn. That's the other thing too. I was like, it's so sad that we're trained to be like, don't be imperfect, you know, just show up and win every time because that's how you move ahead. It's like, how boring.
That was the revelation I was going to
throughout there was the whole process of struggling, and that how we're all super struggling. There's a couple of books I read recently that it's, you know, my grandmother passed away recently of, like, you know, other transitions.
Oh, I'm
are
so having, sorry.
Hey, thank you. So, you know, a lot of transitions happening, and I just keep seeing it. I'm talking to friends too. A lot of people are having a hard time. Everybody's struggling, and then finding, you know, getting rid of our old stories that get in the way of the class, or finding our way through, like, we're always struggling. So the revelation, I guess, has been to know why we're struggling, and that there's something through it, and then that will bring us through this stuff. There's this book, I gotta say, called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. It's great. It's all about the worst conditions of living, but yet finding meaning in it. And we're just all going through it right now.
Yeah. Well, we are, because, I mean, the world. I mean, you know, but also, I think it's really great to just acknowledge that you're struggling, and you will find that more people will come out about that as well, and feel it in different ways. And it's okay. And it's no personal flaw. It's nothing you've done wrong. You know, you don't deserve this, you know, and it's like, but it's just like, I mean, I think it's like anything. It's like just, you know, being sick, you know, you have to, like, it's not your fault, you know, that, you know, you're going, you know,
it's not who you are.
Right. Yeah. It's not who you are. And it's something that we can all acknowledge, that we're like, oh, this is really crazy. Like, we're living in a really crazy time. And it's like, We'll look back at this time and be like, what did we all do?
Yeah.
During that time, you look back and you're going to be like, did anyone even laugh or smile, or right. was there ice cream? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because it just seems so like, oh my God, every day something's going on.
And each person's situation, it's like all relative, and like everything's always getting better and worse at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And I think I think it's really important to acknowledge both.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in just like, just focus on the positive and just see what's good in the world. I'm like,
No,
you have to see what's shit and what's awful, and recognize what's great, and recognize that, yeah, there are, you know, the world is not, it's not going in one direction. You know, it's expanding and changing, and we have to just, like, you know, take care of each other and take care of ourselves, and just acknowledge, like, I'm going through it right now, or whatever, and that's great. That's okay. That's great. It's not like, you know, you're the only one. You know, we're not alone. We're all in this together. And I do think, and I say this a lot, but I do think just like what's going on, you know, has the potential, and it already is like becoming a really great fucked up unifier. Like, you know, because we're all kind of going, this world is crazy, and something's gonna have to
change. It's cool. I've learned more about the word sober, and I'm not like always, you know, I have my drink here and there or whatever, but being sober to like what is going on and not being, you know, overwhelmed by it is tricky, of course, but being able to be somewhat awake, and whether or not it's a shitty situation, our attitude, you know, we can somewhat control what's happening.
Yeah.
How we see things.
Yeah. I love that. Get woke. Well, we're out of time. I'm
Can
so
I say
sorry.
Real quick, though?
Yes, please.
I hate that expression, woke.
Oh my God, I do
what
too.
What it means
I make fun
is
of
fine, but
what
it's
it means
such
is
a
great.
Fucking corny term.
No, it's so corny, and I hate it because what it means I'm all about, of course.
Right.
I'm not going to be like, I don't like it. I don't like people who are culturally aware.
Just
but
such
like,
a corny
it's
town
such
term.
A it's so gross.
It's like conscious hip-hop.
It doesn't roll. Stay woke, y'all. Stay woke. It doesn't roll. At least for me. I've heard it before. It's poetic, but for me, I can't.
No,
like
it's corny.
Up.
It's this.
Yes.
It's this. It's snapping fingers
at poetry
sessions. It's such a corny term.
No, I know. I know. It's.
I have no issue with the issue. It's just.
It's always
the
that
word
to me.
Sucks. Oh, I wish there was a.
Hey.
I don't know.
Blessed be.
Yeah, I know. I know. I totally agree. So, just get behind the meaning of woke, but don't say woke.
Yeah.
It's, you know, yeah, exactly.
Keep your eyes
it's
open.
It's just like everything, though. Like, just be cool and don't say cool all the time. You know what I mean?
Chill.
Stay
be
synonym.
Funky. Be
Stay
funky, but don't ever say funky, like, unironically.
Stay woke synonym.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember years ago, I was hanging out. Do you guys know Brian Safi? I don't know if you know Brian Safi. Anyway, he's wonderful. He was the very first guest on the first episode of the show. There was one time I was talking about a restaurant, maybe, and I said funky. Like, I was like, it's really funky in there. And he just stopped and he was like, did you just say funky? And it like haunts me to this day that I said funky unironically. Don't be that. All right. We're out of time. I want to thank my wonderful guests, Adam Slapin and Andre Hyland. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Everybody, just stay woke. And have a week. Feral Audio.